Hello, 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 guys. Welcome to the show. Welcome to Real Heads Podcast.
Welcome to the podcast, guys.
Your number one podcast for film.
Number one.
Hopefully.
Not number two, baby. Number one.
Not number three.
If not number three, baby.
No.
Number one.
Well, we are here talking about Caddo Lake. This movie came out on HBO Max, and it stars Dylan O'Brien. And there's my notes. And what is the other lady? The other person's name's Eliza. Is it Scallon?
Yeah, I think so.
Scallon. And then is also directed by Celine Held and Logan George. And then is also produced, which I don't know if you knew this, but produced by M. Night Shyamalan.
Yeah, so. I didn't know that going in. And I don't know how I thought like this feels like it's been touched by him.
Yeah.
But when I found that out in my research afterwards, I was like, oh, cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah. And then the two directors actually worked on a couple episodes for his show, The Servant.
Yes. So oh my gosh. Have you seen The Servant?
I've seen the first two seasons. I don't have Apple TV Plus now. So
how many seasons were there, three or four?
I think there's four, but I stopped watching after the second.
So. I know that I also have seen the first two. I can't remember if I've seen season three or not. But I do remember I really enjoyed it a lot. Like it's a really,
I remember you liked it a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Really, really good show. Kind of sucks that it's on Apple TV. I feel like that's a bit of a more forgotten platform outside of like Ted Lasso.
You know?
Like I feel like most people get Apple TV a part of some sort of deal rather than like just getting the service on its own. At least that's what I've noticed from people around me. Maybe that's not actually the case.
No, that is definitely the case. If you had any Apple product,
yeah,
you would get Apple TV Plus for free for like a year.
Right.
And so like I had it through my phone and then Jada got it through her phone after my deal ended up
able to kind of like consecutively.
Yeah.
Keep having the service,
which I loved. Ted Lasso was great. And I did like a lot of The Servant. And even the other show with the guy from Parks and Rec. I can't think of.
Is that Righteous Gemstones or is that?
No, that's on Max, but that's a good show, too. Severance. That was pretty good. Right. I didn't finish it, but that was actually directed by Ben Stiller.
So, oh, sick.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
Love
but
that.
I liked a lot of The Servant. I just didn't have time to finish it because I just didn't want to pay for Apple TV Plus. So.
Yeah, that's fair.
I paid for it for a little while.
Servant was such an interesting show too. I feel like Shyamalan will have these awesome pockets of genius where he comes up with these ideas that are just like never been really done before. And I love that about his filmmaking.
Yeah.
And the same is said here for these two directors that obviously had a bit of influence from Shyamalan as well. Like Caddo Lake, where have you seen a film like this before? I've heard of people referencing the show Dark, but I've never seen Dark.
Yeah.
It's been recommended to me. And I know that there's some like time stuff with that, so which obviously I know we'll get into, but like I love seeing films and TV shows that are just new ideas, fresh, something different, you know. I love seeing that, like in the world where we have just so many reboots, remakes, rehashes, resequels, re-everything. We're just putting old concepts into blenders, pressing puree and seeing what comes out. Like it's so refreshing when a film like this comes out.
Yeah, no, it is. It's completely pretty standalone on its own type of film. I thought that it was like maybe based off of a book, but it's not. Like the directors are a couple and they like write and direct together. So
completely original story then.
Yeah, yeah. From my own research is that they went down to Caddo. They saw a picture of Caddo. Mm-hmm. And just thought it looked so strange because it's in Texas. It sits on the border of Texas and Louisiana.
Gotcha.
So there's a lot of swamp.
I was gonna say, so there's swampy over there.
Yeah. So there's like, it just is like intertwined in all this stuff with just swampland and all that interesting thing. So they saw a picture of it. They went down there to live down there after they've wrapped up some filming on The Servant. Mm-hmm. And then they started to write for that and start to produce that. And It's interesting because this is like M. Night Shyamalan's first film that he produced that wasn't like necessarily his or not necessarily in his family.
Yeah, because he did Trap, right? No, not Trap.
No, he directed
Trap. He did Watchers. He produced The Watchers.
Yeah, which is his daughter's. Which is
his daughter's film. Yeah. You're right. That is kind of cool. So obviously he must have seen something in these guys' story that he really vibed with and wanted, you know, to help push along. And I love that. It's awesome.
Yeah. And it's through their sides of things, you could tell like they were very thankful and hopeful for that, for them to come along and get some type of like mentorship from him.
I'm sure. Definitely.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. My throat's a little clogged. It's the weather change is terrible, but
that time of year.
Yeah. Anyways, excuse me.
No, you're good.
It's
take a sip. Take a sip of agua. I'll also take a sip. We'll take a quick sip break. That's good.
Thank you. Your Powell water is very nice. It's a very wet water.
It's pretty wet.
It is pretty wet.
I made sure to make it extra wet for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
But yeah, you get. They were directing / kind of slightly writing for some episodes of The Servant. He only knew of them because he saw a earlier film of theirs that they did. That's probably more indie film. And he liked and he brought them on and talked to them and asked if they had anything else. And they were working on this and handed them the script. And then immediately he like contacted them. He's like, okay, well, let's start making this movie. And they were shocked. They were like super like, oh man, you know. So that leaves my question mark is what movie are you making that I can look at the script?
You're gonna produce my film? Is that what you're saying?
I'll try with all
and
my
and then mentor me?
Yeah, exactly. I have no prior just like directing knowledge or skills, but
I think this will go swimmingly. I think this would be great. I love that idea though. I could only dream of a scenario like that. Like for me, man, like that would be so cool. You know, certain directors I would love to be under mentorship of. I'd say Shyamalan for sure, for one. The way that guy crafts stories, and his like to even be in the pantheon of having like a title as like the Shyamalan twist is insane. That's wild. Yeah. You know, I'd put him in there. Jordan Peele, 110%. He'd probably be my number one. Yeah. Oh my God. Especially because, you know, like we're both in the horror lane and I want to solidify myself as like the next, you know, Jordan. Who else I put up there? I'd put Scorsese, but that's an easy one to say.
Hmm. Are you a Tarantino fan? Would you be?
I mean, I'm a Tarantino fan, but I think over a mentorship of him, because I just feel like he wouldn't do something like that.
You don't think so?
I don't think he would.
Have you seen his most recent comments about Todd Phillips' Joker?
I've seen that video circulating around, but I haven't watched the video. What did he say?
Oh, he just was super big into it. He was like,
oh, he really liked it.
Yeah, like the second one? Yeah, he said that this Joker, like Todd Phillips, said "F you" to Hollywood, and he did his own thing. That's what he liked it a lot.
Yeah, and I mean that's pretty on brand for Tarantino. I feel like he's definitely someone who's kind of like struck his own lane and his own path and really sticks to his guns to that regard, which is, you know, fucking based.
Yeah.
Like, good on you, dude.
Sorry, I just thought that was funny.
No, it's great. I'm trying to think if there's any other ones. There's tons of directors out there. I'm trying to think of any other ones that stick out in my head that I'd be like, shoot, man, if I could.
What about Spielberg?
Spielberg, yes.
I feel like...
Oh, 100%, 100% Spielberg.
It's interesting that we're talking about these directors. It's like, what would you say that your style of filmmaking lines up more with? Like, I mean, obviously everybody has their own touch and their own niche and everything. But who would you say that you feel like the short films that you have made on your own, who would you say inspired you the most, or what angles inspired, like camera angles and what stuff like that inspired you the most to make that?
I would say my two biggest inspirations are honestly Spielberg and Jordan Peele. I really want to, in a lot of my films, like I love the way that that Spielberg encapsulates the feeling of like youth, and like how like when he makes films with groups of people, you know, like I love how he can tell these stories with ensembles. Like I love that kind of filmmaking. I love obviously like the way that he likes to shoot his effects. Just like his storytelling in general is just, it's almost like it feels like it's kind of old Hollywood, but like not like in like a bad way. But I love like he just like makes movies. You know what I mean? Like he makes movies. You know, blockbuster hits, and like not in like the Transformer kind of way, but like in the like the Goonies kind of way, the Jurassic Park kind of way. You know what I mean? Like it's like. Like you think of those kinds of movies and like how those ones look and feel and how they invoke emotion in you from just like small moments. I love that. And then with Jordan Peele, how he can just take any just random mundane experience of just living life and turn that horrific. It's masterful. It's beautiful because that's truly, to me, that's where I feel like I get a lot of my fear in life from. Like I'm not really afraid of a lot of things, but real life things do invoke anxiety in me and give me a bit of fear. I think about stuff like this all the time. Like I think about like when I leave my apartment and I walk down two flights of stairs to get to my car, and I think like, you know, someone could literally just be at the bottom of one of these steps while I'm walking down. They could just slice my Achilles heel. Yep. And there I go, tumbling down.
Tumbling down the stairs.
You know, and like that's it's like a mundane thing that you just do every day, walk up and down your stairs, that now just becomes horrific. You know, I walk to the little patch of grass and I take the dog out outside the apartment complex, and we have these little garages outside, and the garages have these kind of low like roofs. And like when I take her out in the nighttime, you know, it's those roofs are very like obscured at the top. Like there's not a lot of light around that you can see what's up there. And I think about it all the time. I'm like, someone could just be up there. I'm gonna just be up there, some sort of creature, just be up there, ready to spread its wings and descend upon me and, you know, maul my face off or snatch me up and take me away. Like, there's like things like that that I feel like, you know, Jordan does really well with. And it's like my mind thinks similarly about things like that as well. So obviously, I feel really inspired by him for that reason.
Mm-hmm. So then going from that, then kind of back on the director stuff. Or moving forward with the director stuff, what was something that you felt this duo, like, what did they do well, and or what did they do not too well? And without getting into super spoiler territory.
I feel like something that really stuck out to me while watching this film was how they decided to not hold our hands the whole time. It was like almost a slow burn. You know, you watch it and you're just like, there's a lot of things happening and I'm not entirely sure why it's happening, but I think I know. But like, it's that like bearing the lead and like letting you like kind of like pulling you along and letting you kind of piece it together and not giving it away too early. You know, like I feel like by the time you get the reveal, you're like, oh my God. Okay. Wow. Yeah. And then it puts everything into perspective, and then it invites you to rewatch it and make you watch it again and go, wow, let me see how this actually, you know, looks with this new perspective from the beginning. And I love that. Not a lot of movies do that nowadays. A lot of movies really do want to hold your hand. They don't trust the audience to pay attention. They don't trust the audience to want to really critically think about this stuff and figure out like what's going on. You know, they don't want to get those bad reviews. So they write a script that hits you over the head with themes that every character has to explain to you and say outright. And it's like, no. Like, we don't, like, if it's not a children's film, we don't really need that. And even in children's films, you don't really have to do that to a degree. But for something that I would say that I don't think that they did very well, I can't really think of one off the top of my head, man. I think that, you know, I kind of really liked all aspects of this film. This was a sleeper hit for me. This is something that I feel like would have been cool to see in theaters, but I understand completely why it wasn't in theaters. this is one of those films that you kind of need to like pause it and talk, which I did. Like Livy and I did multiple times, like where we would get to a certain point and we'd pause it and be like, wait a second. Okay. So what do you think? And then we'd discuss like what we thought, each thought, and if it lined up and, you know, and even argue a little bit about it. Cause we're like, no, I don't know if that's the case. And it's like, but I love that kind of discussion, a film that invokes that kind of discussion is, you know, we don't have a lot of those nowadays.
Yeah.
No, it's a risk when you put a film like that in theaters. It's definitely a risk.
No, that, and it's sad that that's a risk that,
yeah,
you know, like people are more afraid to take and put a new piece of art out there, put a new story out there, because unfortunately the sad reality is that a lot of people just are not going to go and see it anymore.
They're going to see that trailer and I think that Dylan would have gotten a good amount of butts in seats because people really like him. But you think about the last movie that he did. What was that movie called? I feel like, was it called I'm Not Okay? I feel like it was called I'm Not Okay.
I feel like he was in other films.
But you know what I'm talking about? Like Netflix film.
He was in that, yeah.
Yeah. Where he was just like kind of a side-ish character, but he was a big part of the marketing of that film.
Yeah.
Because he has a fan following, you know, Teen Wolf guy, Maze Runner guy. We love Dylan O'Brien. So I think he would have gotten some butts in seats, but he's still not The Rock.
No.
Or Kevin Hart, excuse me. You know, so it's like I can see why they feel like they gotta do these movies on streaming. It's like, and like you said, it sucks. It's sad. These films deserve to be on the big screen.
Yeah, it is kind of like interesting. Is like if a movie necessarily has to have like an A+ star or an A+ director behind it so that people will go. Or it's a IP.
Right.
People go and see it. And if it's not, then it's like you get all these like, you know, lower than that, like A- to B. Not saying that Dylan O'Brien's not good because I like his acting a lot, but just out of popularity and acting.
Right.
Like where he's at on the hierarchy, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
You know, it's not necessarily people are not going to go up and show. And it almost just sitting here thinking about it is like, why don't we then just do double features again? You know, it's like, could we not just do that as like, maybe I don't like to say it, but maybe make it a little more pricey, you know, put like $2 or $3 behind it more and then just have a double feature. You get two movies. I mean, I get like movies now are like 2 hours long almost.
Yeah. So I was gonna say, I don't know if people good, feel like they have the time or attention span to do something like that.
No, now you know, you're saying that, I don't think so.
Yeah, either. We've been conditioned for years now to like get everything. It's all about the instant gratification. It's all about getting things here, now, quick, fast. I don't want to think about it. I don't want to have to do any legwork or effort. I just want it, you know, and I want it to make me feel however I need it to make me feel so I'm happy.
Yeah.
But I mean, in a perfect world for me, I would love for us to be able to have a resurgence of drive-ins.
Drive-in theaters would be fun.
Those are such an experience, dude. I love drive-in movie theaters so freaking much.
Yeah.
The last time I went to one, it was a double feature of the first It movie. Mm. God, there was another horror movie that came out at like the same time. I feel like it was like a Conjuring or something like that. I might be wrong, or maybe an Insidious. No, but it was another horror movie. And I just remember that just being such a fun experience. Took me back to being a kid and going to drive-in theaters with my dad and my siblings. And those are, I don't know. I think those are just fun things to do. I wish that those would come back because then you could do double features, you know, and I feel like people are more willing to do something like that because it feels like a bit more of an experience than going to the movies.
Yeah.
You know, like you're in your car, people get the little blankets, you can bring your own snacks or your own food. You're kind of in your own like comfortable, safe space.
Yeah.
You know, with your friends,
you're able to meet other people up if you want to, you know what I mean? Like,
100%.
Yeah, that might be an interesting thing. I don't see that happening.
It probably won't happen.
At least at the moment. I'd like to be hopeful. I can't tell you the last time I've been to a drive-in theater. I mean, I know it was young. I don't remember what movie it was.
I just don't see why people don't see the benefit of that. Like, and you can get partnerships with like local businesses or even bigger, like enterprise businesses, you know, like imagine going to a drive-in movie theaters and you got like a Mikey's late night slice. Mm-hmm. That's for people who don't have that in your area. That's like a really nice pizza spot that is all around our downtown that people usually frequent when they're out going to bars and stuff like that, because they're up, they're open pretty late. Mikey's late night slice. I feel like that's an easy in for a drive-in movie theater and something to get people to want to go to that as well, because they're like, oh yeah, and I can get Mikey's late night. I like that. Mm-hmm. They associate all those good times that they've had going out with their friends and getting Mikey's late night. Now you can have good times with your friends going to the drive-in movie theaters, getting Mikey's late night. Boom, there you go.
Yeah, or what is that? Dirty Frank's
too. Yeah. Hot dog place. People like that as well. You know, I don't know. I just feel like there's room for it in today's world. Yeah. I feel like there is.
I think, I mean, in a nice, perfect world, I think it'd be kind of fun to bring back. But
yeah,
I guess we'll see. Maybe we'll be the
innovators. Maybe we should open our own drive-in movie theater.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I'll produce your film.
Yeah.
And then
so you're saying we open our own drive-in movie theater and we only show my films?
Yeah. It was the
but we got to trick people. We got to make it. We got to like put on like the screenings, you know, whatever new popular film is out. Come see Dude 3. In 3D, and then everyone gets there and they're like, it's just my crappy short film. What the hell? People are rioting.
I mean,
give me my money back.
It would make people interested, that's for sure.
I would definitely get the buzz out.
Yes, it would. So going back to Dylan O'Brien, and also I feel like I can't pronounce her name right. Is it, it's Elise or Eliza Scallon?
I think so.
I don't know her very well. I don't know what she's been in.
I don't know her well either. I've never met her.
Well, yeah, like of course. But how did you feel? These are pretty much the two main stars. I mean, there's a few other side characters here and there, but these are the main stars, you know. How did you feel like they did in their performance wise and if it was good, if it was bad, or if it was just warm, or
I think they both did phenomenal. I have not seen any of her work, but I think she did phenomenal. She did a really great job. I'm very curious to see what she does next. I hope that this exposure, you know, gives her some more roles so we can see her in more things. Mm-hmm. With Dylan, I feel like Dylan's always been great. You know what I mean? Like he even in Teen Wolf, like playing that goofy character that he played, like he has star quality. And I feel like it's just kind of crazy that he isn't more popular, you know, like he's popular, but he's not. And he's well known, especially for like millennials. Like we know of Dylan O'Brien, but like, why is he not more popular? Like, why do I feel like, why am I forgetting his name? Why do I feel like the dude that played the bully in Euphoria has, you know, more heat than Dylan O'Brien? And I feel like he does. And like, I think that's wild. And no knack to him. Like, dude just played Elvis. Like, that's crazy.
Oh, awesome. Oh, no, the other one. You're talking about the other guy.
Yeah, the other guy. No knack to him. Like, he's also a phenomenal actor. But I'm just saying, like, it's like, Dylan's been in the game for a lot longer and has done, like, he led a franchise. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, Shia LaBeouf led a franchise and he's where he's at. He's done plenty of amazing films. So I want to see that same for Dylan. Like, I really, really want him to get some really great films in the future that are just going to solidify him in that spot, because I think he deserves it.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you there. I think he does a really good job. I think they both do a really good job in this. And I know him. I never really watched Teen Wolf. I didn't really like the Divergent series. Like that whole, I like dystopian.
Maze Runner. He's in Maze Runner.
Oh, I'm sorry. Maze Runner. I didn't like
Divergent is Shailene.
I didn't. I fell off of that train after The Hunger Games. Like,
you had enough dystopian films?
No, not even that. Like, I like those type of movies, but those like teen novels, I think, kind of just fell off for me after that, because I felt like, oh, The Hunger Games is...
You don't like you were done with dystopian films led by teenagers.
Yes. Gotcha. I think that's the case.
Yeah.
I liked The Hunger Games. I read some of the books. I watched some of them. I've never actually finished it, but I watched the majority of the films. But I don't know. It just, they seemed kind of like to lose its luster. Like it felt like it became a trend. And I think that's what I wasn't.
Oh, liking. It was a genre. Yeah. It became a subgenre. It became
its own subgenre. And that's what I think. I just felt all these other films were trying to.
And that's fair because like I was saying, you got a little burnt out and they all were coming out around the same time.
Yeah, exactly. But my sister loves Maze Runner and Divergent.
That would be great.
I didn't really watch Divergent. I didn't really watch Maze Runner. So I just was like, it's okay. But I saw him from The Outfit, which was a film that came out, I think, 2 years ago now. And he played some gangster guy in that. And I thought he was really good. And then I saw him in I'm Not Okay, or that film from Hulu, or that came out on Hulu, that I thought was okay. It was decent.
Oh, yeah, you're right. It was Hulu. I thought it was Netflix, but it was Hulu.
Yeah. But no, I always liked him in it. So I'm interested in to see where he goes from there.
Right.
And see if he can get that, I guess, Timothée Chalamet type of stardom that he has been having. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's a comparable, you know, I feel like they're probably around the same age. Maybe one's younger than the other one. But like, you know, I feel like we have this space for these new Hollywood stars to come up, and we'll just have to see who will be the more recognizable, who will play generally the same character.
I feel like it's all about like the right film and the right time.
Yes. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I really want that for him. Like, he's got to get the right film. It's got to be the right time and just like, you know, just like turn into something just fantastic. Mm-hmm. You know,
but I think he's doing more obscure stuff than just franchises. So,
And not to say that he needs to jump on a franchise. Not at all. He's done that bag. He doesn't need to. And Timothy didn't do that either. No. You know, like Timothy's had that as well, where he's gotten those roles that were really great roles, really great cast, really great directors, and that came out at the right time, the right exposure, the right buzz, and then he becomes this cultural. Icon. People are like, oh my god, Timothy.
Well, actually, Timothy has, I mean, he's in the Dune franchise, so.
Well, yeah,
you can argue that.
But that's tail end. That's what I'm saying. Like that, like he was already a mega star before that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Like he didn't become Paul Atreides and then, oh my god, look at this guy. He's you know, like he was him before that.
I get you. So that's all I kind of have for this opening talking segment. So if that's the case, then we're going to get into reviews, spoilers, or discussion spoilers. If you haven't seen the movie, if you do want to stick around, I guess stick around if you like doing that stuff. I know there's a lot of people who do that, but we highly suggest that you watch the film first before watching us, or at least pausing us. So if you do so, it's on Max, HBO Max, whatever you want to call it. But it's on Max. If you are paying for it, there's no other extra subscription you need for it. So go and watch Cattle Lake. It's out now. It's been out for like a couple weeks now. But so I did like this film. I don't hate it.
Yeah.
I felt that it was kind of super slow in the beginning. Like I just was not like. The beginning of it, like there was a lot of things that were happening that were like, you know, drama moments. And I appreciate drama I like drama films. But I just was not really invested in it at the moment. And that might also because I wasn't really planning on watching it until you said, hey, let's watch this for the show.
Yeah.
but, you know, I just was like, oh, well, we'll watch it. And, you know, I'll sit here and see what happens. I knew that it was getting some buzz online, but I just didn't think much of it, you know.
Yeah.
So I don't fully remember most of the beginning. Like, I know, like, there is some moments where Eliza's character, Elise's character, I'm sorry, I'm going to pronounce her name wrong for the rest of the show. But I know, like, she is... they are like having drama issues at home with their mother, who's like and their stepfather. She doesn't really feel like she's a part of their family and whatnot. And she runs off to her friend's house, you know.
Yeah.
That's all I kind of remember about. And there's like another character who's Dylan O'Brien, who is like just a worker. And like he's like cleaning out some swamp area. And yeah. That's all I kind of remember about the opening part. I don't really remember a distinct scene that made me sit there and think like that was really like interesting, if that makes sense. And I don't know if you had any of that. So that's why I was going to ask you that. Like the beginning part, what did you feel? How did you feel about it? Like, well,
I definitely,
before stuff started to hit the fan.
Yeah, I definitely get where you're coming from with the whole like saying like, yeah, I think that the beginning film or beginning of the movie was a little bit slow. And I think that going back to what we were saying earlier, kind of speaks to what we've been conditioned to get in terms of storytelling for these commercial films that come out. You know, everything's got to be like beat after beat after beat after beat. And then like you're just now all of a sudden you're in the climax and it's like, oh, OK, yeah. Like you felt like you didn't even really have to do much to get there. You're just you're following the formula and you're already there and you don't feel fatigued usually. And I think that, you know, like that just goes to show that we're just not conditioned anymore. Excuse me, to watch films like this. Because yeah, the film, I guess you could say in the beginning is slow, but I wouldn't necessarily even say that it was slow. I think that it's just the way that the story needed to be told. Mm-hmm. They kind of had to show you all these like backstory moments and mm-hmm. and then bring it all together in the end. It'd be like, think about like Back to the Future, right? If you took a lot of the story beats of Back to the Future and like rearrange them to be in the order that this movie kind of presented its story, it wouldn't really feel necessarily like you were necessarily understanding fully what was happening until you got to the end, you know? Cause it's like I'm trying to think of how they would do that. Like you take Back to the Future 1 maybe, and you start off with like him already in the past and like doing things with like meeting his parents and stuff like that, you know, like you'd be kind of like, okay. And then what happens? And yeah. It's like, oh, and now he's got to get them to date. And you'd be like, okay, but like, why, you know, like you don't have any thoughts about, or you don't have any information about why he really needs to do any of this. He's just doing things. Things are just kind of happening. And people are kind of questioning stuff like, who's this kid that lives here? Why is he here? Why is he doing stuff? Mm-hmm. I don't really like him. And then you got the bully guy and he's just like, I don't like this guy. Maybe we should rough him up. And your constant question for about half the film would be, yeah, like things are happening, but like why? And I think the Cattle Lake does the same thing. You know, like there's the start of the film and like there's like the narrative start of the film and there's like the chronological start of the film, like history wise, you know, mm-hmm. and you can kind of play with that idea as you watch this one. And that kind of the way that they laid this out kind of determines how you're going to view the story initially until you get to the end. Then you can kind of recontextualize everything and it will make more sense. So I get why it feels slow. I would argue that it's just the way that the story was narratively told. It has to be this way so that you get to the end and you can recontextualize how those events occurred and why they occurred the way that they did. And that's just like a, you know, it's an art form. That's just a different way of watching a movie. You know what I mean? And mm-hmm. and we don't have a lot of movies that do that. So I really like the beginning. I did also have a bit of that thought in the beginning of like, why is it, what is happening?
Yeah.
But I think that's because I went in not knowing a lot about this at all. So I had no preconceived ideas of it being anything about time and stuff like that. And I think if I would have gone in with that, then I probably wouldn't have even have had those thoughts to begin with. So yeah, I enjoyed the beginning.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. It's not that I didn't enjoy it. It just was like, I just wasn't like, I was kind of half paying attention to it, like on my own end. So it was just kind of like, like, I was like, okay, like, this is cool. Like, there's some, like, bayou stuff going on, you know.
Right.
And then we got some wolves that shouldn't really be in the bayou, but that's kind of weird. But we'll see what happens, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think when stuff started to really, like, pick up is when, like, the sister to the main character, which is...
Anna.
I know that. I was trying to say the actor's name.
Oh.
But
Anna's not the main Dylan. Character. Anna is the
Oh, would you say
is her sister. Anna is the
Oh, no. Okay. No, Anna is yes, the younger sister.
Mm-hmm.
Eliza. We'll just say Eliza.
Gotcha.
Her character.
Yeah.
When she got the notification of like, hey, you need to come home, like, you know, your sister is missing, you know, come. And so I think that's when it started picking up. And then stuff started to get kind of fishy also with the dude, Dylan O'Brien's character, who like he went into that weird vortex for a second and like kind of like, you know, came out. And I was like, well, that's kind of strange, but like maybe that's just something interesting.
Yeah.
But really the one scene that started to kind of show that something fishy was going on was when Eliza and the boat got taken and like she just showed up.
But you know what all that meant, like what all. Yeah. And okay, you're just explaining your thoughts in real time.
Yes.
Of how you were thinking about it. I see. Yeah. Okay.
Just clarifying. I watched the movie. Yeah.
Yeah. No. But still, dudes, people can still watch movies like that and be at the end and be like, yeah, man, I didn't get it.
No, I know. You know what I mean? I know. There was people like that from Everything Everywhere All at Once. And I think that movie,
which is insane.
A masterpiece and is like super great. But my main point was that was when I started to realize that it was about time. You know what I mean? It's like
okay,
when he kind of went through that vortex thing and he noticed the old pipe, like, you know, the old whatever that's called, the oil thing.
Yeah,
that you see, or it might be a well thing too, but that's when I started to be like, okay, well, maybe there's something with time going in, because there was wolves and that was that. So when was that the similar for you to figure out that you were thinking that this is a time, something to do with time travel? Like what scene stuck out to you the most that pointed that out?
I would say the trailer kind of gave it away for me.
Oh, you watched the trailer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you didn't see the trailer? No. The trailer kind of gave it away for me. But aside from that, you kind of got that vibe also just watching it, and how it always felt like the Dylan's character, and his female co-star were, being shot like paralleled. Like it always felt like whatever she was doing kind of mirrored a bit and paralleled in certain ways what he was doing. Mm. And that to me was always a clue in of like, okay, either they're going to meet up at some point, or my initial thoughts were, oh, maybe they're on like alternate dimensions. Like this is like his dimension and that our timeline rather, where she doesn't exist and this is his story and this is her story. So I had thoughts about that kind of from the beginning, just based on how the film looked like it was playing out narratively. I didn't truthfully know, obviously, like what was going on until he started to actually showed him actually jumping to a different time period. And then you're like, oh, okay. So he's in a different spot. He was in a different spot then, and now he's in a different spot now.
Yeah. Yeah. I what was your take on this form of time travel? Do you feel like it was a decent one, like, you know, compared to recent, you know, if you want to go Marvel films compared to their time travel multiverse stuff, or to Everything Everywhere All at Once, you know, they Back to the Future,
yeah,
like what, how did you feel like that, like I feel like I've never seen time travel kind of like to an extent done in this way before, you know, like where there's like one central location,
mm-hmm.
that you pass through this central location, and then like you end up in another part of a time, and then you try to go back and you're in another part of the time, and then, you know, back and forth, you know?
Yeah, no, it definitely was an interesting portrayal. of time travel. And I think I enjoyed it a lot. I really don't like getting bogged down with the idea of like, oh man, time travel so complicated, so crazy. We gotta watch what we do and say. Like, I don't like when filmmakers feel like they have to be so constrained by, you know, like the crazy like film bros or like super, you know, scientists or whatever that are like gonna make YouTube videos about the film later and be like, well, actually the theory of that, blah, blah, and then like pick apart like the theory of time travel in your film. Like I just don't care. You know, I just feel like as long as we don't over explain it in the film and we make it make enough sense just narratively, then just play with it. It's a concept that we don't understand. We're not gonna understand it. It doesn't exist to us right now.
Yeah.
So who cares? That's how I feel about it. Like, just make it make sense for your film and don't over explain it, because then we're gonna take time away from the story, take time away from the characters, and I'm gonna get bored because I'm gonna be like, I don't care. I don't need to know exactly how this works. Just make it work. Just make it make sense. And I'll believe it because you told me to. That's at least how I like to watch movies. You know, people always say like you have a suspension of disbelief when you watch films, and yeah, that's true. And especially I feel like when it comes to things that just don't exist, I think when it comes to things that don't exist, then you really like, it's not even really like a scale that I'm really even looking at that point. As long as it makes sense for the film, you know, you can have the flying spaghetti monster appear out of thin air in your movie, but if it makes sense for your film, then I don't care how that happened. Mm-hmm. And you shouldn't either, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they did it well. I think that there was a little confusion at first, but once I picked up on like what was happening, I was like, okay, well, we're in these different, you know, sections of time. There's like, it's kind of interesting because it is the Caddo Lake, you know. It's like, you know, it's already, if you look from a above shot, it's like spirals upon spirals. So it's kind of like you go into this one central part that changes, you know, it's kind of like a trolley system almost. Like you come in and they may change a lane and then they go down that lane, you know.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like that, and I thought it was interesting.
It's like a web.
Yeah, like, it's a web.
All interconnected. Yeah. Different paths, divergent paths.
Yeah.
No, I get that. Visually, that is really cool, and narratively, it's even cooler.
Yeah. So this is another thing. This is closer to the end of the film when, you know, she comes back. You know, if you don't know much about Caddo, which I didn't know much about Caddo, but there's a dam there, and the dam breaks, and then like, you know, there's water that's supposed to be going through, you know, what these swamplands are now. It was originally, I guess, supposedly just supposed to be all water, but then, you know, people came and dammed it up. And so the lake from Caddo comes back into the swampland area, and it breaks the time, like, portal. Is that what I was getting? Does that make sense, or do you think?
Yeah. So narratively in the film, the only time that you can time travel is when the lake is in a drought. If the lake is not filled with water, then you cannot, like, whatever magic that is happening there is not allowing you to time travel. That's why, and that ending sequence, Dylan was trying to rush and get back because he knew that dam was about to break. And once it breaks, he's stuck there.
Yeah. Is that, did they say that in the film? Is that what, did they explain it?
Or? It's not like overtly said, but it's okay, like, it's just, in the sense of what, like in the moments where his character and his co-star's character are trying to like do their little research digging to figure out, like, because Dylan's thing was he realized that his mom was only having these seizures when the lake was in a drought. And then once you realize who his mom is and how you realize that his mom is Anna.
Okay.
And then you realize that she basically has these seizures when the thing is in a drought, and during her life, those were also probably the moments when she also was going through time that we see in his co-star's timeline, you know? So it's like, it's just it, that that's kind of how that gets explained. Like, that's why I mean, where I'm saying like, this movie is cool in the way that it doesn't hold your hand and like have to overtly explain the stuff to you. Like, it invites you to like take a beat, pause, think, reflect, discuss, and then keep going.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the only thing that I wasn't too sure about, is like, how, why is it? And like you said, it's a movie about time travel that doesn't exist. So it's like, you already got to have a certain
suspension of disbelief
to watch the movie. But I was just confused. I wasn't sure if like, is it just always there? And then the water came and like broke the time travel portal thing. So I was like, okay, well, is it because the water's there? Is that why? I figured that was the case.
Yeah.
But I didn't know if they overtly said that or whatnot. But I'm not mad that they didn't. I think that's fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can come to that conclusion on my own.
Right. You know? And I think that's what they wanted you to do, you know, to kind of follow along these two characters and their storylines as they kind of travel through time, and then realizing like the correlation. And it's fun because like, it really just ends up becoming a circle, you know, like their timeline traveling and their lives just becomes kind of like a circle. And again, you could be one of those, you know, like scholar people that are like, well, you know, but like, I don't care. Like, I don't care the how, and like, if this is accurate, this is, if you're telling me in your film that this is the lore, then this is the lore. Like, that's, you know, what we have art for. Like, we get to just make up whatever we want and just do it.
Yeah.
I love that.
And you were a fan of the twist of,
of course, of
Anna, the missing little girl.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the film was, and I'm explaining this also to people, if you haven't seen the film, and if you have seen the film, Anna, the missing little girl in the film, going back in time, gets sent back to the 50s and comes up and lives and gives birth to Dylan O'Brien, who then Dylan O'Brien, before he disappears through this time travel, has a kid who's Eliza, and with her mom. And then she also, then that mom then goes on to also have birth. Were they stepchildren, or was she related? Or
in the beginning, she only realized herself to be the stepchild of the redheaded lady, and she thought that her dad was just. The dad was the stepchild. Of a stepfather, and she that was her mom. Yes.
Yeah.
But I think that she wasn't technically related to Anna. Anna was her stepsister, to her knowledge. I think this is what that was.
So was it that her mom still also gave birth to her?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when she met her in the past, when she was going through her car and trying to take that necklace that she found, that her mom was holding her as a baby.
Well, yeah. Not necessarily her. I'm talking about Anna. So is the mom also Anna's biological mother?
I think so.
So then she
gets to be two people at that point. She gets to be, what is it? She gets to be like a grandma and
a mom
and a mom, or it's either a grandma and an aunt. Yeah, because it's like,
so Dylan she O'Brien, has that.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry. I'm just trying to. This is Kant. It is a little, you know, wishy-washy. Not wishy-washy, but it's a lot to take in.
It is a lot to take in, but it's crazy.
So Dylan O'Brien is the biological father of Eliza.
Yes,
he has sex with her mom. Mm-hmm. They birth the child. He goes missing for years, don't know, because of the time travel stuff. And then she finds another person, and then does she also then have Anna, which then Anna gets sent back in time. And then
Anna is Dylan
O'Brien's mom.
Yeah.
So
she gets sent back in time and never comes back. So she lives her entire life, grows up. And because she has, because remember Dylan's mom has the seizures, blah, 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 because she's been in and out of time this whole time. Like she's not like, that's his mom. That is his mom.
So would that necessarily kind of be incestuous?
No.
You wouldn't think
so? No. Because the redheaded lady is not Dylan's mom.
But she's Anna's mom.
Yes. Anna is not the co-star lady's mom.
Oh, she's not. That was my point was. I couldn't remember if she was just the stepmother or if she was
like, she's her grandma, I think, is what that would be. I think she would be the co-star's grandmother. It's like she's your sister and your grandma.
Yeah, Eliza. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the Eliza's mom.
Because your dad is Dylan.
Right.
And Dylan's mom is your sister. So she's your sister and your grandma.
The sister.
And your mom is just your mom.
And your mom is just your mom.
Yeah.
The sister grandma. And
Dylan did not have anything to do with. Oh, no, not sorry. Dylan is still your dad. Yeah. Dylan is your dad. That is your grandma and also your sister. Because of two different timelines.
Okay. I guess I'm still confused whether or not the mom gave birth to both Eliza and Anna.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So is it
even in her timeline, that's what happens.
Yeah.
In her timeline, that's literally like we know that from the beginning. Like that is her mom from the beginning of the film. And she also gave birth to Anna. But Anna goes missing. Okay. And they never find her in that timeline because in Dylan's timeline,
a child.
Because in Dylan's timeline, Anna is stuck and she becomes an adult and then she marries whoever and has a kid. And that kid is Dylan. Dylan then goes back in time trying to figure out what happened to my mom, finds that little girl in the woods or in the swamp, doesn't know who that is, turns her in. Comes to find out that's Anna but he doesn't, I don't think he even realizes that yet. Then he goes to visit his dad in the hospital. He's talking about that stuff with him, travel, then go back to his co-star's timeline. And she's trying to figure out what's going on. And she sees her mom with a baby and this necklace and the guy, and the mom's like, oh, Dylan's ran away. If you find him, let him know, like, come home, blah, blah. Because Dylan doesn't know that he has his daughter. Mm-hmm. She thinks that this girl is the other woman. And then she goes then to the library and tries to look up the name of Anna. And she finds like the book, like the class book, and sees like she
grew up. I get that.
She had a life.
Yeah.
And all that stuff. And then she had a kid.
Yeah, which is Dylan.
Yeah. And then that's when she has that moment of like, oh, aha, like I can't have her back. Like this is her life.
Yes.
And then she goes back.
No, I get that. I get that. My thing is she a product of, maybe I'm just looking into too much of this. We'll move on from this.
I feel like I laid it out.
No. No, you did perfectly.
I think I crushed it.
You did perfectly because I felt I knew this to begin with.
Yes.
Like I know this. Mm-hmm. My main thing is if Dylan's mom is also not the stepchild to Eliza's mom, she is Eliza's mom's also daughter. So Eliza's mom fell in love with Dylan, who is technically related to her in that way. She's like her kid's son, right?
But so. Not, you gotta think about it. It's not in that timeline.
Right, not, obviously.
Like
not.
In if you that's why it's a circle. So if you started if you started here on the circle with Anna's mom having already remarried or just married, she didn't marry Dylan, having gotten married and had a kid who was Anna. Dylan is dead at this point, right? Dylan is dead.
Right.
And then she has her other, she already had her other kid, and she has this new kid with that new man.
Yeah, the bald guy.
Yeah. So that is their, that is their timeline.
Right.
But Anna gets displaced from their timeline when she goes into Cattle Lake. So when she gets displaced, now she's effectively dead too. So it doesn't matter what Dylan does, it does, because he's already dead. It doesn't matter what Anna does, because she is now presumed dead, gone, missing, whatever. In another timeline, but like going backwards, you have Dylan, who before Anna's mom goes and finds another man and has another kid, like he's going to look, he like breaks off his relationship with her, because, you know, they like hooked up with her, whatever, and he breaks off that relationship because he's like, well, I need to go figure out what's going on with my mom. Like, I feel like something's weird going on. So he goes, sets himself on that path of figuring that out. And then he has to then travel to a different timeline. When he does that, he's now gone from that timeline and her timeline. He's gone now. He's completely displaced himself.
Right.
Now he's in another timeline looking for his mom. In that timeline, he finds his mom and saves her. And if he didn't have, if he wouldn't have done that, the circle would have gotten broken.
Right.
And he probably, I don't know.
He wouldn't have been born.
Maybe he wouldn't have been born.
Back to the future
style. Back to the future style. You know?
I get all this. I know this, that's the thing.
You get the circle.
But they, I just am like, they're all related to each other in that way. And like,
in different ways, but at different points in time. So it's not as weird as you would think. Because it's not, it's just like.
But they all show the same genes. You know what I mean? Like.
Sort of. I guess.
Yeah, it's okay. I just I don't know. It just seems kind of weird to me to an extent, but it's okay.
Well, don't go to Cattle Lake then, man.
I won't go to Cattle Lake.
What are you scared for? You're like, man, I really don't want to end up running into my future son and have him have a baby with me. Like, what? You're so pressed.
I was just, like, I just wanted to make sure.
I just want to make sure this doesn't happen to me. I think you're safe.
No, I think you're
sapient.
No, I'm not like that. I was just kind of like confused of like, you know, it's my father grandpa. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
my uncle grandpa, whatever you want to say.
You ain't got a couple of those?
No.
No?
I hope not. I don't think so.
Your family's lame.
No.
I'm kidding.
Anyways. Kind of wrapping up, I want to share something that I felt was a really emotional and good scene, was the Dylan O'Brien dad scene. I felt like that was kind of like a nice touching moment that like was pretty actiony to an extent. You know, there was a lot going on. He was running from the police.
Dude escaped the law with handcuffs.
Yeah.
Jumped off a roof.
Yeah. Then jumped into stole a car.
Yeah.
Stole a car.
He stole a car with his hands cuffed. That's crazy.
Yeah.
You know what level of scared you got to be to just let someone steal your car when they're handcuffed and have no weapons? I would be like so just dumbfounded that someone would even ask me that or suggest that I need to give them my car. Give you my car? Sir, get off me. I'm driving away.
Yeah, but I really like that scene a lot, and I just felt like it needed to be stuck out because it was just a very kind of endearing moment, I'm sure, for that, you know, the father who thought his kid was missing, you know, and you know, that he's or probably also dead, and he, like, is there, but he doesn't look like he's aged, besides he got a black eye, but, you know.
Yeah.
So.
It was good. She had a good moment like that, too, with her dad, actually.
Yeah.
At the end where she was basically saying to them that we're more connected than you would think. And that, you know, we're not going to find Anna, but like, I know she's safe. And like, that also hit.
Yeah.
Like, oh, man. You know, and he's just you could see him have that realization of like, you're probably right. And it's like sad, but it's like bittersweet. You know, you're like, oh,
yeah. Yeah. Was there anything else you wanted to add to this movie before we wrap up?
Aside from make more movies like these, please.
Yeah.
More movies like these, please. More buzz for movies like this, please. Go see it if you haven't seen it, or go watch it, rather. HBO.
HBO.
That's where it's at. Max.
Yeah, it's not HBO, unfortunately, but it's on Max. Yeah. I will give this film 3 Dylan O'Brien's handcuffed out of 5.
I'd give this this film I'd give it a whopping, I don't know, man. I feel like I'd give it maybe a whopping 4 sliced alligators.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was so random in the beginning. I was like, what the frick is this alligator
sliced in half?
In half. And then the reveal of that, I'm like, oh, yeah, that makes sense now. Which brings me back to what I was saying before of like, you don't have to hold my hand. You don't have to explain to me right now why that was a thing, as long as it does get explained eventually. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'll give it that.
All right. It's a pretty good film. I would say go watch it.
Yeah.
And on that, we're going to end this episode on Cattle Lake of Real Heads Film Podcast. If you guys like us, please like, subscribe to our YouTube channel.
100%.
If you only are listening to our audio, please go over to our YouTube channel and see us just stare deeply into each other's eyes for about, what, usually maybe 40 to 30 minutes, or maybe sometimes an hour plus.
Something like that. Yeah. Also, I spent a lot of time setting up the set here. So
yes,
go watch some nice YouTube, please.
He's got some nice photos up now.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you don't see our YouTube channel, and you only listen online, you can find us anywhere you listen to podcasts. So,
facts.
Besides that, I hope you have a great day.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
We'll see you soon.
Bye. Yeah, do your thing.
What? See you later. Bye.
Yeah.
I feel like the thing is I this is a side tangent in the bye goodbye section. I thought that I came up with that from, like, my own just thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
I got it from Anthony from Smosh.
Oh.
He says see you later, bye, at the end of his more in-depth, like, views, you know, his more one-on-one conversations.
Yeah, well, who even is Smosh anyway?
Well, it's not Smosh. It's Anthony Padilla's channel.
Yeah, but who's Anthony Padilla? He's a freaking hack, bro. Steal his shit.
Anyways, see you later, bye.